So welcome everyone. It's really difficult to see. Welcome to our session on Agile Planning and Requirements in Team Foundation Server. So one thing you'll notice from that title, there is no version number. You know, normally it's in 2013 or 2012. And I've deliberately left that off because we're going to move around a little bit. You know, we've gone from a certain release cadence in Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server to this accelerated cadence. So there's been a bunch of things coming out since 2012, you know, update 1, update 2, update 3, now 2013 is kind of knocking on the door. And so we're going to move around a bit and see what came in what version, because it's kind of easy to miss some of this stuff as the release cadence has really accelerated so much. So we're going to cover kind of looking back from 2012 forwards. So my name's Rob Mayer. I'm a Microsoft Visual Studio ALM MVP, lots of letters. I'm a professional Scrum trainer with Scrum.org, a Kanban trainer with Lean Kanban University. So that's a very long way round of saying I work with a lot of companies on implementing different types of agile processes and tooling. And so Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio kind of forms part of that picture of team-based tooling, helping people get the most out of team-based development. So doing Kanban, doing Scrum, doing Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio kind of gives me the opportunity to go in and look how companies are putting together their software development process and take that knowledge back to other clients and through training and consultancy, you know, hopefully help them get the most out of the tooling and process that they've chosen. So what are we going to cover? I want to look at three things really in detail. We're going to talk a little bit about agile requirements. What do we mean by agile requirements? Why are they different to our traditional requirements? Kind of what's special here? Why are they sometimes more difficult to handle than our traditional requirements? How did we get where we're currently at with our tooling? So looking at Visual Studio 2012, Team Foundation Server 2012, kind of what came for us around the agile planning and requirements functionality and feature set? And what has changed since then? And we'll sort of bring ourselves up to date based on update 3, and then we're going to look at what Microsoft determining Enterprise Agile. That's kind of a scary label, right? It's enterprise now. We've made it enterprise. I'm going to stay away from that. This is really a marketing label, and I'm going to show you the features that Microsoft are talking about when they give it this label, Enterprise Agile. If you think that what they've come up with is a bad thing, I'd love to get your views after the talk. But don't feel that this is kind of Microsoft making Agile suitable for the enterprise. It's very much kind of a marketing label, but it is something that you'll come across, which is why I've given it kind of their product name or their product marketing label here. So we'll start off with just a reset on ALM. ALM is, you know, Application Lifecycle Management. Team Foundation Server is Microsoft's ALM product. And when they say ALM, and they've kind of been talking about this for a few years now, they're talking about broadly these big categories. So it's spanning from everything from I have an idea, I have a vision, through to, okay, we've built it, we've released it, and now we want to operate and keep the thing running smoothly. And what I want to call out here is release. So traditionally, Microsoft have talked about release. What did they have to help me do releasing? Think about release management. Think about how I handle releases in my organization. How was that kind of satisfied in the product set? Anybody? I have swag, by the way. Anybody? MS Build? There wasn't really a lot, right? It was great at compiling. The build was kind of nice, but not really a lot about sort of what goes into a release. How do I ship that? How far through my process has it got? And so they've made a big change now. They've acquired a company that makes in-release. So this release management product, it's integrated into Team Foundation Server. So if you're a Team Foundation Server user and release management is an area of interest or pain for you right now, you know, expect big things to come and check out the current in-release product, and you can see kind of the direction they're taking as they're going to fold that inside the product itself. But we're not here to talk about release. We're here to talk about requirements and planning. So what do we mean when we say plan? I've got these 2 points here. Scaling agile. It's another one of those kind of scary things, right? Everyone, it seems right now, is trying to tell you how to scale agile. You know, there is the scaled agile framework. We've got DAD, disciplined agile delivery, right? There's all these frameworks and approaches coming out to tell you how to scale agile in your organization. So by scaling agile, I'm taking that to mean here, you know, I've got more than just a few teams running Scrum or Kanban or whatever process works for you. And I kind of want to put some kind of organizational view around those people, right? I want to understand, are we on track as an organization in this agile adoption? You know, are we kind of all moving in the same direction? Are we improving as an organization? So that's sort of what I'm meaning here by scaling agile. Equally, it might mean we're building a really big product, project, whatever it is, and we've got two teams, three teams, four teams, all working on the same project or product, right? That's another way we can interpret this scaling idea. And the second one, I think, is more interesting. So we often start with a pilot team, right? We'll go into an organization, they'll say, we want to try a new agile process, whichever one it is. And they're ready for a pilot. And they get all the keen people that are really excited to work this way together. They give them a meaningful challenge. They get all the interference away from this team, really set them up for success. And this team rocks. And the company says, this is fantastic, put it in. You know, we want to grow this in our organization. And then a tool normally comes along at some point, a Jira, a Team Foundation Server, version 1, Excel, right? Whatever you choose. And often we start to sort of lose some of the agility that got us excited in the first place. And the tool takes us there, right? Because someone at the top who gets to be in charge of this says, well, we kind of need reporting at a rolled up level from all our teams. And it'd be nice to know we've got some consistency in the way all our teams are doing things. So let's put a tool in place that sort of make sure everyone follows the process. And all of a sudden, a lot of the attraction about team-based agility that we got excited about is kind of taken away when it's now, well, you've got to do what the tool says. You go to these companies and you say, oh, who updates the hours every day in the tool? And everyone kind of looks at their feet and says, you know what the Scrum Master does? You know, and we're serving the tool rather than the tool serving us. So how do we get some of the consistency that we're interested in, but not turn into this, you know, tool police where people are forced to do what the tool tells me? So I think about agile requirements at a number of different levels. Who uses Scrum or a Scrum kind of derivative? Maybe 70%, 80%? Okay, so I'll use that terminology because most people are going to be familiar with that. If we're following Scrum, right, we're following the book, we have our product backlog, we have these regular product backlog grooming meetings, right, where we make our product backlog items at the top of the list actionable. So we split them up, we decompose them into smaller and smaller product backlog items, so we can take a number of them into our sprint. And the book says, kind of should be about 2 to 4 days of effort for each product backlog item. So that's quite small. We're building potentially this big system and we're taking in these quite small items. It's easy to get lost. It's easy to get lost in these hundreds and hundreds of small items and lose sight of where's the big picture? Are we actually still tracking to where we originally wanted to go? We're looking in these tiny, you know, sashimi type slices through our entire architecture stack. Are we still getting to be where we need to be? And our stakeholders have a different view. So I'm your product owner or one of your stakeholders in your company. And I come to you with my vision. I want lunch. I want lasagna. I want salad, maybe some dressing on the side. This is my minimum viable product. This is my minimum marketable feature, right? Whatever your terminology works for you. This is what I want to ship. And the team comes back to me, and the team says, okay, we're going to use this incremental process. We're going to iteratively deliver your lunch. We're going to break it up into slices. You know, we'll de-risk the program this way. We'll make sure you've always got something of value. Sounds fantastic. You know, I'm all over that. I can see how you've got to do that. I want lasagna, salad. Go. Right? Those are my two units that I'm kind of interested in. I want to prioritize at that level. I want to do my release planning at that level. But the team sees things slightly differently. So my team sees, well, hold on, we've got to go and buy all our vegetables. We've got to chop up all our vegetables, right? We've got to get some mince. We've got to brown the mince. Then we're going to cook off the vegetables. We're going to add the mince. We're going to add the tomatoes, make the tomato sauce. We haven't even got a lasagna yet, let alone getting to the salad. So we're kind of operating at these two different levels. And people use themes or epics or scenarios, right, whatever labels you choose to kind of put on these to try and map these two different levels together. But fundamentally, we're operating at two different areas of granularity. I, as your product owner, probably am not that interested in this level. What I'm interested in is my lunch. I want my lasagna, I want my salad. So we acknowledge that we've got all these different types of thing on our product backlog. We've got goals, themes, epics, whatever you can call them, product backlog items of different sizes. What, the ones near the top are the ones we've split up to be actionable. Ones down the bottom are still really big because we don't want to spend the effort to do the analysis on them. We want to keep this lean approach, so we don't want to waste effort on analyzing things we may never do. So let's look at our tooling for a minute. Think about our problem, and I'll give you a couple of scenarios. Imagine I have three teams, Team A, Team B, Team C. They each have their own product backlog, and that's what we're showing up here. The width of the rectangle is the size of the product backlog item, so how much effort it's going to be to complete it. Visual Studio 2012, Team Foundation Server 2012, delivered a fantastic, I think, experience for a team, one team doing Scrum. So think about Team A. If you're Team A, and that's your world, just inside that bubble, managing your product backlog, we got some great tools out of Team Foundation Server 2012. We got sprint planning, we got backlog management, we got a sprint board, right? Drag and drop, all these fantastic features. If I'm your stakeholder and I'm actually looking across Team A, Team B, and Team C, I didn't really get anything, right? Nothing was really delivered to help me here. And what if there are more teams? So maybe I've got eight teams. Maybe I have a bunch of core applications in my organization, and I put one team around each application. Say you as a Scrum team are going to handle all the changes that come through to this application. But that's a really common way to structure a development team. So maybe here I have eight, and really this is the same problem, whether I have three teams, five teams, seven teams, right? It's just details. It's the same issue we're facing. So that's quite a common layout. And now I, as a stakeholder, fit over the top of this. And I want to know what's going on. Right? I've got some work that needs to be done that crosses team boundaries. So my example before, I have teams based around applications. Say I have some compliance change. It means many of my applications need to change. Right? That is one feature. At the top level, theme, epic, whatever you want to call it. Right, I'm going to stick with the word feature because you're going to see it in the product. That's one feature up here at the stakeholder level that results in a number of product backlog items for a number of teams. And so that's the view I'm interested in, right? That's the view I want to manage at as the product owner or stakeholder. Equally, we could be building a big product. And I can't do that with 10 people. I can't do that with one Scrum team. I want two teams concurrently, right? Working off this bigger product backlog, delivering me a larger piece of work. So Microsoft have introduced this notion of a portfolio backlog. Again, terminology, you know, use what works for you. This higher level backlog that contains features, could be themes, scenarios, epics. And these map onto the work that teams do. So for example, to deliver that first epic, I might have to make changes to my backlog and deliver product backlog items for three different teams. Right, so one feature could be three product backlog items across many teams, it could be eight, right? Whatever the linkage is. Similarly, another feature could be a completely different set of teams. One feature might be delivered entirely out of a single team. So that sounds interesting, but it sounds a bit enterprise. Right? That's sounding like a process that we all get to do, and we get this lovely rolled up reporting as long as everyone feeds the tool, right? You do it the same enterprise way that we've built for everybody. So how do we get that view? How do we get that feature-based, you know, product backlog management for the stakeholders and the people who need it without destroying the ability of individual teams to be agile? And so one of the keys is process. Let's say Team A doesn't want to do Scrum. Scrum doesn't work for Team A. They're in the same team project, right? The same container as all these other teams, but Kanban works for them. Now, this is a key part of the Team Foundation sort of offering for me. We're not forcing a process choice down in each individual team's throat. So I can choose on a team-by-team basis, hey, I want to do Kanban. Actually, Scrum works for us. Another team might say, well, we love Scrum, but hey, let's experiment with some pieces of Kanban to see if it helps us. We can do all these things without huge changes, any changes to our process template. So we don't have to be administrators, you know, phone up IT, work item customization, none of that at all. We don't need the powers that be to even know necessarily we're making these changes to our process. Right? Quick, customizable dashboards and views that we can use to try these new things out and not break all of the good things we're talking about in terms of that feature level rollout. So that's one way. Another way is work item tags. Who uses work item tags today? Anybody? Wow, I knew about three or four. Who knows work item tags exist? Okay, a few more, not too many more. So work item tags provide us a way to introduce lightweight metadata onto work items. And it's kind of, well, yeah, so what, ho hum, right? But taking that to the next step, I can now do filtering based on that metadata. In the future, I'll be able to do querying, reporting based on that metadata. Now, all of a sudden, I'm effectively introducing changes to the work item state system without changing the work item state system. So think about that for a minute. You know, the traditional states that your work items go through. To change that, it's a phone call to IT, and it's, we'd like to change it, and I've just impacted everybody else who uses our process template, right? And most companies just don't want to go there. So we can use tags as a quick way to introduce new process changes for our teams. But we don't want to impact other teams. We don't want to have to call the big kind of grand poobah of Team Foundation server, but we want to make some changes in the way we do things. So tags provide a really flexible way to do that. So my tags are different across teams, right? My set of tags and what I use them for can be completely independent of your set of tags and what you use them for. So what about our levels? I've talked about this two-level structure. I have features, and then I have product backlog items that live inside teams. Maybe I want initiatives, goals, scenarios, features, product backlog items, right? We can keep going with this. I think you're very quickly going to hit a limit on which you don't want to cross. I've put N here. N, in fact, equals 7. As long as your levels are less than 7, it's going to work. So you can have 5 more than you get out the box. You get out the box, features and product backlog items, you can add 5 more. If you need more than 7 levels of rolled up hierarchy, please get in touch. That sounds like the most awesome consulting opportunity I've ever come across. Right? So there's a case study for me next year. Okay, one more thing before we start getting into some demos. I want to talk about how the release cadence has shifted across the product line and think a little bit about why that's the case. So to give away, I have 2 copies of Rich Hundhausen's Professional Scrum Development with Microsoft Visual Studio 2012. It's a great book. I was a reviewer on this book, so I guarantee I've read it. It's very good. And I have ALM and Visual Studio branded Rubik's Cubes to give away too. So good for the kids. We had Visual Studio 2008, Visual Studio 2010, and Team Foundation Server came along with each one. Team Foundation Server 2012, you know, we kind of got a nice pattern going on. Everyone knows what's going on. no surprises. And then the world went crazy. Right, we got some of the dates up there. We got update 1 in November, we got update 2 in March, and update 3 is shipped too. So all of a sudden these fast releases started coming out for Visual Studio. Who can tell me why? It's worth a book to you. That was the first hand I saw go up at the back.
Microsoft's changed their development strategy.
So they've changed their development strategy. Okay. I'll give you a Rubik's Cube for that one, because it's not the answer I'm looking for. Come down at the end and get it. I believe they had to change their development strategy because of the reason to change. Why did they change? Right, because they put the hosted service up on Azure. It's a book for you. So they decided to launch, you know, an instance of Team Foundation Server, now called Team Foundation Service, on Azure. And to take advantage of the rapid release cycle they could do in the cloud meant that in order to consume some of these new features, we needed client updates. And so part of this big move to the cloud was not only re-engineering the product so that it was cloud-friendly and it could run up on Azure, it was actually changing their whole development and support process so that they could support pushing out this client, you know, 4 times a year. This 2-year cycle moving now to quarterly. And we've seen over the last few days, Visual Studio 2013 has just been announced. I think November 13th, is it, for the launch date. So it's kind of a year since the last big launch for 2012. So imagine this, we've shifted from a 2-year cycle. We want to take advantage of that cloud infrastructure, that opportunity to basically change our cadence. That cloud team's working on a 3-week sprint model. So they run a sprint for 3 weeks and push their changes into production. Not all of them are turned on straight away, but they all go every sprint. And then a lot of those things need a Visual Studio update before they can kind of light up. So they've gone through this huge engineering shift, right? The way that they deliver and support the product. So think about the support network of, well, which update are you on? You know, what version of what is talking to what? We've got all the agents, the actual server products themselves, Visual Studio as well now. A huge shift in the way they've done it, all driven by wanting to get value out of their investment in the cloud-based product. Okay, let's switch over and see some of this. So I want to start from a dashboard view. Like the one I need. Yeah, just want that one out. Great, thank you. So we're looking at our product backlog item view. 2012, this was shipped backlog management, right? So we can make use of our quick add panel. We can add new backlog items quickly. We can see over here on the top right our velocity chart. So we get this view on how we're tracking over time. Are we taking on a reasonable amount of change for this particular sprint? So I did 35 points in iteration 1, 49 points in iteration 2, and so on. So I'm going to use this quick add. We'll say we want to support the Windows Phone. Probably right for our audience. And we'll change the states and say, let's commit to it. We're going to go through and I'll assign it to me. Whoops, to B. And it's going to be about 13 story points. So all this shipped in 2012. Right, this ability to do fast backlog management. I can reorder and say, actually, I think it needs to be about here. And I can assign to a sprint. So if my team decide, you know, our current sprint, we're in sprint 3, it's going fantastically well, we need to pull in some more work, We can use this view to then allocate this to sprint three. So we'll go ahead and do that. And we can see the iteration path has been updated. It's a great kind of single team view. Let's talk about tags. Let's go through and open this one. And add some tags. So you can see up here on the top left, these are the tags that have already been added. So I can choose one of these, and Windows Phone looks like a good tag to add to this. And I want to add another tag. I want to add a new tag. Maybe I'm going to put this as Android. There we go. That'll do. And I'll turn tags on this view. Okay, so we can see the things that have already been tagged and what I've just done with the Windows Phone and Android tag. And so imagine this quick way to mark up any work item with things of interest. Maybe it's, I'm going to code this next. Maybe it's, I'm thinking about, you know, doing this one in Node. Who knows, right? You can really be as flexible as you like with the system. Very, very lightweight way to work. And then I can do some filtering on it. So I can say, well, I'm interested in looking at which work items are exhibiting certain tags. So again, I can choose this filter over here on the right-hand side, show me those things that are tagged with Windows Phone. And then this is cumulative, so I can also move over Android. Show me those things that are tagged Windows Phone and Android. Right, so I can start narrowing down to a view that interests me. So tags are nice. Tags can be filtered like you just saw. Tags can't be queried yet. So that's going to be one of the things that will be coming soon, is the ability to set up queries on tags. So I'm going to turn that view off, and we'll go back to looking at all tags. For those of you that are on the 2012 product, what else looks different here? Burn down graph? Yep. Any others? Worth the Rubik's Cube to you. Anything else look odd? Anything else look less gray than it used to? Colors. I don't know who said it, but things over there. We've got some color, right? This is new. So we've got color coding on work items. So we have a red work item. Any guesses? What, bugs? Yep. Previously, to find out what was on our backlog, right? To even find out, well, is this a product backlog item? Is it a bug? We had to go in and turn on, you know, I want to see the work item type and add it to this view. And it's just yet more text I've got to look at on the screen. And now we get this easy way to visualize, well, what type of colors match what. And we've got more than just blue and red. So I'll go ahead and look over here. We can see our features are, well, we've got purple, yellow for tasks. Blue for our product backlog items. I think that's everything apart from maybe a test case. Okay. Which is down the bottom. Orange. Can't see that color very well. Right, and we can change these colors. So colors that work for your custom work item types, if you're using the box product, like the on-premise product, you can go and change these colors to whatever suits you. If you're using Team Foundation Service in the cloud, you're out of luck. Right? Still can't do customization in the cloud product. It's coming, but not here yet. Okay, let's talk about boards. So let's have a look at our Scrum board here. I'm going to look at my current iteration. So I'm currently working in iteration 3, and I've got this, you know, tree view, hierarchical view of my sprint backlog. I'll go through to my board. And we've got a traditional Scrum task board here. Product backlog items on the left, tasks that it's been decomposed to, and we pull those tasks from left to right as we finish the items. So again, nice experience for a team if you're doing Scrum. Somewhere down here, here's our new product backlog item. So I can add a task in here. I'm going to code it. And if you look over here in the top right-hand side, you can see the sprint burn down chart. Right, so how much work have we got left to do? So I'm going to add this to be a lot of work so you can see that sort of uptick in effort. Let's say this is break all the rules. It's a 30-hour task. So you saw that. So we get real-time updates, right, finally, which is nice. And we can drag this across. We can update our work remaining. We can change who it's assigned to. And that uptick will now disappear on our burn down once we pull it into done. Right, so we had this available for our scrum teams. And then kind of Kanban came along. And Kanban isn't scrum, right? As much as some people will try and convince you they're somehow interrelated, right? It's a very different thing. And we're interested in very different views. And so we got this Kanban board introduced. So update one, I'm going to go back to my backlog view. And so here's what we were seeing before, my product backlog. Every team, notice, nowhere have I had to say I am doing Scrum or I'm doing Kanban. Every team gets a Scrum board, gets a Kanban board. So this is not an either or decision. If I want to use this Kanban board, I can. So this came along in update one, and you can see the default board here is just the work item states. So it's following the work item state for product backlog item and bugs. But obviously, I'm not going to want to keep it that way for long. So some of the things we're interested in Kanban are managing our work in progress. Right? We want to make sure there's an even flow through our system. And that goes to the type of information we want to see. So you can see this isn't a burn down chart anymore. This is now a cumulative flow chart. So if we're looking at the backlog level, if we're looking at the Kanban view, cumulative flow is the type of visualization we're interested in. Is our flow appropriate? And I want to change some of these limits, right? So this says the committed column can hold 5 items. Well, that sounds a bit big. Let's pull that down a bit. Don't go over here to customize columns. We're not doing any work item customization. We're not updating anything that's going to impact anybody else. And committed, we're going to say is, well, that should be more like 3 hours. A limit of 3 work items in progress. And so you can see that's gone red. So it's told us we're breaching our WIP limit, our work in progress limit. We now need to do something about that. We can, you know, pull some things out and understand if we've actually got a flow problem in our process. So beyond that, we want to visualize our work. And part of that is visualizing our workflow. So our columns should be and will be changing all the time, right? As we try new process enhancements and want to understand if those have improved our process or not, we're going to be changing our board constantly. So we want a really nice, easy way to do that. And so we can go back to this customized columns view. And I'm going to put a new column in between approved and committed. And we'll call this ready for test. We want a WIP limit of 2. And we'll change the state to be committed. Okay, so here's our new column. And these, let's start with this top one here. This is obviously in the new state. If I drag it over to approved, what state is that work item in now? Anybody? Sorry? Hopefully it's in approved. Okay, let's check that. Okay, so it's in approved. Now I'm going to drag it across to my new ready for test column. What state is it now? Ready for test, I heard. Any others? Committed. But because we don't have a one-to-one link, we've got this meta state, which is ready for test, which is just what I want to call the label. I don't want to interfere with the work item state system, right? Who knows what reporting and process I have to go through to get that changed. I just want something that works for my team. So if I go into this ready for test now, you can see it's committed. And if I drag it over to the next column, what's going to happen to the state? Stay the same, right? So independently of the state model, we can move it around and add this visualization. Right? So that enables us to be agile on our terms as a team. And I don't want to impact anybody else while I do these things. So if I go and look at a different team, I'm going to move over to, just go back up so we can see our columns. We've got new approved ready for test. I'm going to change to, in the same team project, a different team, the database team. And let's look at their Kanban board. Untouched, right? They're still using the default. So we can make these changes to satisfy our own team's agility, safe in the knowledge we're not touching anybody else, right? You're not going to get the process police turning up at your door saying, what have you broken for other people? Okay, what else is new? This is new. This is new in 2013. It's already live on Team Foundation Service, but it's new in the 2013 product. What I'm showing you here is a VM of 2013 preview. This is a preview of the on-premise product. There's a release candidate at now, so there's a later drop that you can download now. This is the preview. So the ability to look at past sprint boards. This is something a lot of people ask for. Before that, we can only look at the current and what's coming next. Now we can go back and say, well, what did we do in sprint one? How did it finish up in sprint one? How did we finish up in sprint two? So we get this ongoing ability to look back and see how our board finished up. That's something a lot of people ask for that's made it into 2013. What else is coming on our Kanban view? So this board is good. Anyone notice anything that's missing that I showed you? I actually did it on the Scrum board. Another Rubik's Cube up for grabs. Sorry? Who was that? Who said that? Wow, can't see a thing up here. Oh, there we go. Yes, that's right. Add tasks. You saw me add a task straight off from the board view on the sprint in the sprint board. Can't do that on the Kanban board yet. I also can't reorder items vertically here on this board. So if we're doing this, if we're considering this priority order, drag this one, you know, pull this one first, and we change our mind, I can't do this. So that's something else that's coming, right? That's something else that they've said is going to be addressed soon. So I, right now, if I want to add a new product backlog item, I can't do it from this view. I have to go back onto the backlog and use that quick add panel to add it. So we've kind of got to 2012, some of the things that came in some of the updates, and I want to start getting into this notion of enterprise agile now. What do we mean by this feature view? So I'll go back to the main team here. And you see this features link up here at the top left. This gives us a similar view to our product backlog, right? It's color-coded differently, and now they're called features. Whenever you're ready. No Rubik's Cube for you. Now they're called features. And these are brand new. It's a brand new work item type, and it's our portfolio backlog, right? It's our ability to visualize at the lasagna and salad level. So we can reorder. We can drag across to iterations. We can do all the things we can do on our traditional backlog management view. Let's open one of these and have a look. So what fields are available on here? You'll notice there's no estimation field. There's no effort of work to complete. There is a target date. I'm going to come back to that later. So target date, kind of when I would like to see this finished. So I can start as a stakeholder bundling these together. Maybe I want these in the same release. I want to reorder them. I can start operating at this kind of more interesting layer. I don't want to get into those tiny 2 to 4 day product backlog items. So looking at the board, how do we visualize progress of these? Well, we use the Kanban board. And we get to do all the things that are turned on in terms of functionality in our Kanban board. We can set WIP limits. We can look at our cumulative flow diagram. Right? It makes sense to visualize these things, bearing in mind they're delivered by multiple teams, possibly on a different cadence. Right? There's no guarantee these teams are all doing Scrum. Some of them may not be using a sprint-based process. Not all the sprint dates might line up. And so a flow-based approach kind of makes sense with this when we're looking at this bigger items, right? These features. So So that's fine, kind of interesting. How do we track how far through we are? You know, how much of this feature has been built? How big is this feature when it's actually been allocated down to a team or pulled in by a team to actually work on? So we can see some of this via this view. You see this view toggle down here, and it gives me some options. I'm going to choose backlog items. And what that's done is now shown me all of the backlog items that are related to those features. Right, so it's a top-down view. Based on these features, show me all the backlog items that make up delivering a feature. So this television schedule lookup's interesting, right? The second one down. Second one? Yeah. It's delivered by two different teams, right? The show you that. I'm going to put area path on here. Actually, I'll take tags off and put area path on. So teams are defined by areas. I set a team and I say this is the area they're operating at. So you can see here that, get this out of the way, my television schedule lookup feature has two product backlog items. One of them is delivered by the base development team. One of them is delivered by the database team. Right? So different teams have a hand in finishing this feature. And I get to see all of this viewed top down as the stakeholder or product owner. But what if I'm in the database team? Right? If we turn this kind of problem on its head and say, I'm now part of the database team, let's go and see what they see. So we'll look at our backlog, and here is that product backlog item. And let's say you've come to me and said, you know, we've got to do this one next, it's really important. Well, why? You know, this seems like a really silly problem to attack for our application. I need context, right? What's the big picture here? Are we on track? Remember my kind of wood for the trees? What is the context of why we're doing this? How do I get a good baseline of the importance? And so really I want to see back up to the feature. So remember I showed you top down, all the features and all of their product backlog items. I'm now going bottom up. I'm looking at one product backlog item in particular, and I want to see how it relates to the big picture. How does it relate to features? So from this view, I'm going to choose features. And so now I can see our product backlog item, and I can see the feature that it's related to. Notice I can't see the product backlog items that other teams are delivering to finish that feature. If I want to, I can go into the top-down view and see all of it. But at the team level, generally, I don't care. I know what I've got to do, and now I know what it relates to, why it's important, right? What is the actual underpinning reason, the context of what we're doing here? So we can go top-down, we can go bottom-up, just by really where we start our view from. How do we link these together? In the preview, it's a very bad story. And it's not what's going to be in the shipped product. So I'm going to give you a view at the end of how to do it right now on Team Foundation Service. So bear with me on that. And I'll show you how we can kind of make these links together. Okay, I want to show you another example of this in action. I'm going to go over to another team project we're doing for time. So imagine this scenario. You have a product backlog, a master product backlog for your organization, for your product line, whatever it is. And you've got two or three teams that are going to pull work from that product backlog. Right, so you want to allocate, whether it's a top-down push, whether it's a bottom-up pull, you're basically spreading the workload across more than one team. That's difficult to do in today's tooling. And I don't care, this, Jira, right, they're all the same. It's quite hard to do in today's kind of model. And 2013 is really getting into this wave. Microsoft's view is they're going to start addressing this problem seriously in 2013. So let's kind of look at how you might set that up. We can go here and view our base team's backlog. Okay, so we have user stories. We have features. We have no sprints. Right? Notice there's no sprints there. That's because this team, this view, isn't doing sprints, right? This is the master backlog view. This is our base view. And what we're doing at this level is really tracking our features. How are our features progressing across the effort that our teams are doing? So it's the child teams, you know, underneath this master backlog view that are actually doing the work. So we'll look at our stories. And you can see here I've tagged one of these stories with prop. So we've given an indication of the team that wants to pick up this story when it becomes available. So I'm going to flick through to the propellers team here, which is one of those child teams. So they have a backlog. Notice they have no features, right? Because that's handled at the top level. So they're working off a product backlog. And they're doing Scrum. So we can see their sprint backlog here. They're using, you know, capacity management, iteration planning, all the great things that came in 2012 for a single team experience. That's what they're doing. We can see their board. So they're full, you know, loving Scrum. That's their process. And so let's say we want to pull that product backlog item down from the top level into that propellers team. Let's go to our backlogs view. And that basically means changing the area of our product backlog item. So we're going to say, well, this should be handled by the propellers team. So it's gone from this view. You notice that warning that's come up? That's telling me you can't see this anymore because your current view doesn't look at the sub areas, right? Because that's what the teams handle. I'm just looking at the top level. So it's good. That should now have showed up on the propellers team product backlog. Let's flick across here and I'll add tags just so that you know I'm telling the truth. Okay, and here it is. So it's ready for us to work. So we've gone through this process. Maybe it's like a Scrum of Scrums meeting or a coordination meeting where some members or all the teams come together and say, okay, who's going to do what next? If you're working like this, each team's backlog should be quite small, right? Maybe 2 to 3 sprints worth if you're doing Scrum, because it's all held at the master level and the reordering is kind of done up at that feature level, right? So the teams would just be pulling in 2 to 3 sprints ahead so they know what they're going to do next, what's been either allocated to them if you're using a top-down process or what they've pulled in based on their experience. And I'm going to show you one other team. It's the same process. It's just another team working in the same team project. And they are getting allocated work off the master backlog in exactly the same way. And this is really what we talked about earlier. The ability to still be agile as a team. And so you can see this team, no Scrum, no sprints. They are doing a full-fledged Kanban implementation. So they've got board customized, custom columns, they've got work in progress limits. They don't necessarily want to use Scrum or they're trying something different. And yet they're fitting nicely into the same process of it's rolled up. I can work with the master backlog. We're just a sub-team, but we own our process. We own what we do. And we can do that without any administration privileges on the tool, any way, any knowledge of customizing Team Foundation Server. And I can also see what is yet to be mapped, right? What is unmapped, that list at the bottom that's not indented yet. So I can tell, do I still have to do any mapping? Maybe for some you don't, but do I still have to do any mapping back up to the features? So that will be the in-product experience. Right now, the experience is not something I really want to share with you, but that's what will be in 2030, and that's already live on service. So talking about, remember, our scope schedule team, how are we tracking? Remember that target completion date we looked at in a feature? This is kind of, I think, how it's all going to come together. Work item charting is based on, released on Tuesday, Team Foundation service only. It's based on queries, and right now it works on flat queries only. Here's my product backlog, and I can go to this chart. Any query that you've created, you can go now to this charts view. Here's some I've already created. The first one is a pie chart based on the work item states of my product backlog. So based on my backlog, how many are done, how many are in progress. Then I've got a bar chart showing me the same thing. Underneath here, I've got a stacked bar chart showing me by work item type. So how many bugs, what bugs are in each state, what work item, what product backlog items are in each state. Right, so I get a good view of progress that way. Equally, I can get a pivot table view of the same data. So this is, you can think of the tip of the iceberg, right? The reporting story in the Box product right now is complex. For any of you that have had to change MDX, SQL Server reporting services, the warehouse, you know, my heart goes out to you. When is it going to update? Is it real time? When is the job going to run? Because this is based on queries, it's obviously real time and it's going to update instantly. And so you can imagine there's dashboard views coming, right? There's going to be a lot built on top of this technology. Now it's in the stack. And so I think, this is my view, not anything I know from the product group, this is going to be the future of reporting, probably for the Box product eventually too. Right? And so this is going to answer some of those questions on schedule. When are we done? It's going to use those target dates and it's going to roll up to dashboard views like this that probably then are going to drill down to the queries underneath. So just in time for my talk, which is a nice release date. So I'm going to wrap up with everybody's favorite way to finish, licensing. How much does it cost? Firstly, I've got some great news on licensing, excitement. Then I've got some other news on licensing. First, the great news. Backlog management and sprint iteration planning. So that quick add panel, backlog, drag and drop up and down, allocate to a sprint, you saw me drag it across to iteration 3, and then going inside the sprint, doing allocation to people and looking at how that, you know, the panel on the right-hand side, capacity, we can work out if we're over-allocated as a team, if we've got the right amount of work. From 2013, that's now going to become a CAL. It's going to become licensed via a Team Foundation Server CAL. That used to be a premium feature, right? So we needed Test Professional, Visual Studio Premium with MSDN, now it's just a CAL. So that's good, right? That's a huge win. What was a very expensive feature has dropped down the stack. In other news, what I've just shown you, the Agile Portfolio Management, is a premium feature. So you're looking at Test Professional with MSDN, Premium with MSDN, or Ultimate with MSDN, if you're using the Box product. But there's also an alternative, right? All of this stuff, and in fact more, because it's always being updated, is available in Team Foundation Service. If you've got a team of 5 people or less, this is free. I mean, this is the best free tooling you can possibly think about, right? All of these things, completely free. Doesn't get any better than that. If you have a team that's bigger than 5 people, then those features light up depending on which level of Visual Studio and MSDN subscription you have. Right, I'm not going to give you the full chart, but some of them are premium features, some of them are not, so you can check that out. Okay, we are just about out of time. There was another session right after this on testing that unfortunately had to be cancelled because the guy's sick. So the related content is find me later at the Microsoft booth, I'm afraid. What I also have still is one book to give away and 4 Rubik's Cubes to give away. These are great Rubik's Cubes. First question gets the book. Say that again. Are you talking about the on-premise product or Team Foundation Service?
On-premise.
No. And no is the other one. I just thought I'd, you know. Books for you. Any more? We're down to Rubik's Cubes now. Yes, at the back. Customize, is it possible? So the question is it possible to customize the columns in the sprint board view as well as the product backlog board view?
Yeah.
Is that right? So the sprint board, the to do in progress, you mean? Yes. So yes in the on-premise product. So that's not a quick and easy customization though, right? Because it's not distributed in the way that the Kanban board is. Yes. Wow. So they have more localized data centers coming if it's a latency issue. I don't know the progress on that, but I know I've heard Australia and Singapore, but I don't know where that's up to. Performance.
Have you used service?
Oh, yeah. To be honest, I've never had a problem with service performance. and I've often seen it beats corporate network performance. So I would test it, but I've seen it being used really effectively even with people that have offices in the UK, offices here, and it's been a great solution for both sides, and you think that would be the worst of all worlds, and yet, you know, they've gone forwards with that as the solution, with that expensive networking, you know, acceleration kit. So that's one more. I've got two left. Yes. Sorry, I missed that. Say it one more time. Which of the new features would you get in Express? I've got one more to give away. These are team-based features. So if you think about the way Microsoft positions its SKUs, Express is really the hobbyist product, right? So it's you on your own. You're working on... Right. You know, I haven't seen what's in 2013 Express. I think I saw Adam here somewhere. Adam's an MVP from Australia. Adam, which of these are in 2013 Express?
No idea.
No, I honestly don't know. If you want to see me at the end, I'll find out and get back to you, because I think that's a really good question. So I thought you were talking about Visual Studio Express, right, which is a really short answer. But yeah, Team Foundation Server Express is there will be some of it. I honestly don't know, but I'll find out for you. Yeah. Last one. Is the web UI the same as the Visual Studio UI? They're merging. They're not the same right now, but more and more settings that used to be available directly in Visual Studio. So for example, changing iterations in Visual Studio, you used to be able to add, you know, new iterations directly. That now takes you off to the website. So everything telling you that the web is the future and Visual Studio will just point into those web pages. So right now they're kind of in the middle of that story. Some of it you can do directly from Visual Studio. I mean, loading work items, for example, is still happening inside Visual Studio. That's not porting you out to the web. But a lot of the settings screens have been updated to just send you off to the website. I think that the team is probably constantly evaluating the return on rewriting the same thing in a lot of clients, right? That's got to take a lot of time and effort, and they're probably looking to, from what I see, to you know, minimize that effort to just the most valuable items. Okay, I'm out of Rubik's Cubes. I've got one more slide. I'm out of time. So if you've got any questions, please do see me at the end. Unfortunately, there's no more swag. And the last thing is do fill in your evaluation, because lots of great prizes to be won. Thank you very much for your time.